Hello and welcome to The Logistics Tribe. I'm Boris Felgendreher, founder of The Logistics Tribe, and today's episode is hosted by Marco Prügelmeier. His guest on the show is Bernd Grosch. Bernd is Chief Innovation Officer at Harmonize Mobility and a globally recognized expert on the systems and standards that need to be put in place in order to safely deploy autonomous delivery robots on the sidewalks of our inner cities. And those will come faster than most of us think. Companies like Amazon, FedEx, Starship, and Uber are all running pilots for the small electric autonomous delivery bots in multiple cities across the world as we speak. The goal is to lower the cost of last mile delivery and to reduce emissions in the city. Very good idea. But as you will learn in this episode, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed in order to avoid chaos on our sidewalks as these bots roam around everywhere. Super interesting topic. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the Logistics Tribe, Bernd. Nice to have you here on the show.
Oh, thank you. Marco, thanks for having me. This is always exciting to have this work looked at so closely.
Yeah, great. Maybe you can, Bernd, you can describe a little bit what you are working on and a little bit of your background for our audience.
Sure, I'd love to. Briefly, my background, I'm a systems engineer, which is just a branch of practical engineering mathematics for systems and so on. I think most of the listeners are pretty familiar with those ideas. And that's what I've been doing for the last 45 or so years.
And quite some experience.
Yeah. Well, there's always more to learn. I certainly don't. Yeah. I've just scratched the surface during that time. One of the things I've done sustainably throughout most of this time is I've worked on standards. I've worked on standards here in the country I'm in, Canada. I've worked on U.S. standards with a couple of different groups. And I've worked in the last, I would say, 15 or so years on ISO standards. That's the International Organization for Standards. And those standards with the ISO have all involved transportation in some way or another. And in particular, they've involved road pricing systems back to the, I'm sure, you'll recall the German road pricing system from the mid-90s and on and so on. So I worked on those standards.
Are those different kind of toll systems or those road systems?
Those are road tolling systems that were at that time starting to use GPS systems. They were starting to try to do tolling without the gantries and without the radio beacons that vehicles were wearing. And we were moving from that form of radio transmission in the vehicle to the gantry, and we were moving to GPS systems that would maybe communicate over the cellular network, for example. They would record locations and they would record tolls that way. But there was a long effort to standardize that through the 90s and early 2000s, and I was involved in that up until about, I would say, up until 2010, something like that. But more germane to what we're talking about now is that in the end of 2019, October of 2019, I approached the ISO saying that we are on the verge, I thought, of having a significant number of automated delivery robots and other kinds of robots operating in public spaces. In other words, operating on the sidewalk or on the pavement or maybe in bicycle lanes or maybe on roadsides. But anyway, operating among pedestrians and among driver vehicles, vehicles with human drivers in them. And we were going to also have vehicles such as robo-taxis and apparently automated delivery trucks and so forth. And all of these were going to require some kind of guidance. And what I meant by guidance, I wasn't talking about robotic guidance with the cameras and the AI. I'm talking about like a reservation system. Where is it that you can park? Where can you unload?
Not the technical guidance, some more the organizational guidings around it, right?
That's absolutely correct. It was the kind of thing, and you'll see this, I think you know this very well, you'll see this on the shop floor, when you have robots from multiple providers, and we expect it to have, we already have sidewalk robots or pavement robots or delivery robots from multiple providers, that's already it's already the case. And I'm talking about companies like DHL and companies like FedEx and companies like UPS and some startups like KiwiBot or like Starship, for example. So there's many of these smaller startups with These are vehicles that are you know, maybe a quarter of a meter cube or a little bit more, a third of a meter cube. And they carry small loads. They carry 15 or 20 kilograms or 30 kilograms. Some of them are a little bigger and so on. But all of these would be expecting to share public spaces with. And this is not a problem that we have on the shop floor with a random number of pedestrians just going about their business. Nothing to do with the robots at all. So at least on the shop, at least on the shop floor, the humans that are there are either working there, somehow involved with the job of the robots, maybe not with a particular robot, but nonetheless, they're working and they're sharing the space. They're sharing a job space with these machines, and they know about these machines, and perhaps they're trained to collaborate with or to coordinate with them.
They know how to interact with them, right? Because they're trained to do that. Okay.
Right, and then you'll have systems that are multi-operator systems on the shop floor. There's a group called Mass Robotics. I think it's housed in Boston, but that's a coincidence with the state of Massachusetts. But it's Mass Robotics, meaning lots of. That's what they mean by the word Mass Robotics. And that's the same problem. It's the multi-operator problem. But these are, I'm going to call them industrial robotics. Industrial meaning it's on a shop floor. It's on a manufacturing floor, or it could be in a warehouse floor. If you think about Amazon robotics, a huge, well-organized floor, a very well-organized surface, a well-organized layout of the travel routes and the storage routes and the placements. And so all of that, and it has to move very quickly and very effectively and very efficiently. And so now you can have multiple operators in there because, you know, some robots are just moving things around and some robots might be monitoring things and some other robots might be cleaning things and various things that robots can do, not all from the same operator necessarily. And how do you coordinate all those? So I'm going to say naively, I don't want to use the word easy, but it's somewhat more straightforward on a shop floor, however complex it is. At least you can understand the constrained environment.
Yeah, sure. There are more restrictions and more, let's say, boundaries. Yeah. So more known environment too, because it's a factory and it's inside a factory. Yeah. But what you are talking and what you are working now on is really the open field, let's put it that way, and the sidewalks of this world, right? And you were, if we could go back a little bit, Bern, you mentioned that the current situation is already that we have those robots running. Can you give us some examples where we can find those robots right now on the streets and on the sidewalks?
I know that Amazon has at least one, and I'm sure they have more, pilots in cities. These are robots moving on streets with pedestrians in one or another city. I don't know the names of each of them because I don't necessarily study each one of the particular trials. But so Amazon has at least some, and I don't know if I'm talking about 5 or 50, but some small number. The company Starship, which had them sooner. These are small. These are the ones that are about a quarter of a meter cube. Or a third of a meter cube, thereabouts. Their biggest site happens to be in a city called Milton Keynes. And what's unfair is that Milton Keynes is a well-planned, wide sidewalks kind of city. It's kind of the opposite of a small European city with medieval streets. It just has a space that these robots can move more readily in. And it appears to be highly accepted there. But here's the other problem with that one. I know I'm segueing a little bit, but the issue of looking just at that city is there's only one operator there. There's just Starship. So if you were to add, FedEx and add DHL to that same set of streets, then you have the kind of concern that I have is how do we coordinate these? Because in the shop floor, even with multiple operators, you still have, you're in a collaborative workspace. These robots are intended and designed to collaborate with each to get a job done and collaborate with the humans. But on a street where we're delivering, so you have the FedExes and the DHLs and the Starships delivering, there's something of a competition for space. Now, I don't mean a competition in a bad way, but they each need to go about delivering their deliveries. They're not, you know, the FedEx robot is there to make a delivery.
Yeah.
They're not there with a primary intention of collaborating with, let's just say, Starship. Starship is there to make their deliveries. And those deliveries are independent of each other. They're going from the, in other words, the A to B that are traveling is independent. Now, they may share a sidewalk, so they will collaborate in the sense of not running into each other, obviously. They're not going to do something foolish like that. But they may find themselves having to take turns. So what happens when you're when you approach a narrow space? Let's say that narrow space has a person in it. Now there's a robot approaching from one direction, another one from another direction. And somehow we have to navigate past these places. We have to perhaps give way to the human. Let's just say that's one of the rules. And then what's the rules for these two to pick? Because there's only perhaps only enough room for one to pass at a time, for example. So how does that exchange take place?
Yeah, sure. I understand. And it's it's not such an easy problem, right? And so and that is the new standard that you are currently working on, right? And it's a ISO standard. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the standard and what should be included in the future. What's the timeline to this? Because it, to me, when I heard when I was talking to you for the first time, it sounded really that there's a real plan now and it's evolving over the next couple of years right now, right?
That's correct. Well, when I first approached, I said. There needs to be four parts. I knew there needed to be a part defining data. There's a data definition element, and that data definition would apply throughout the entire standard making process. Then we needed to have a part for just for the robotaxi. In other words, how does a robotaxi know where it can stop to pick up a passenger or to let off a passenger? Parenthetically, you can't have, like right now, if you take a taxi can stop in the middle of the street and you can hop out. It might block a bicycle lane or whatever for a minute. Not that it's okay or not, but that's just what goes on. So all kinds of mishaps with bicycles and bicycle lanes and pedestrians and so on. But we stumble through picking up and getting into and getting out of taxis. But in the future, when those are machines, when those are automated machines, stopping in an arbitrary place, stopping on a bicycle lane, stopping in the through lane. That's not a sensible way to design an automated system. You want to have places, pull-off places. What do those look like? How big do they need to be? How many do you need? Do you need them? And what do you do? How do you assign them? How do you tell a robo-taxi, go to place at location so-and-so to pick up, given that you want to pick somebody up at place so-and-so, go and stand your vehicle at this spot. And pick that person up. And then when you deliver them to this other place, place B, stand on that spot and let your passenger out, for example. Same with goods delivery. Maybe I need 2 minutes to pick up or leave off a passenger. They on average take about 2.5 minutes. But I might be delivering something, and a delivery might on average take 11 or 15 or 12, whatever minutes. So I need to reserve a place and a time. And then I need to deal with things, for example, if the place is not available, it becomes unavailable for some reason, some mishap occurs, something unexpected occurs, and the place that your delivery truck was supposed to use is no longer available. And we just found out 3 minutes before your arrival time, so we have to reassign you. And what do you do
You have to get a new spot or a new order for the robo delivery taxi
That's right. I need to get a new spot. And if I have one that's not close enough, should I tell you, should the system say, go around the block until something opens up? What do we do? So there's one thing, it's very easy to understand a reservation system. That's not difficult. But understanding what to do when exceptions occur, which always occur, that's where the complexity comes. How do you handle all those exceptions? Now, amongst that, I want you to throw in scofflaw parker, somebody who parks their car in the spot. Then that the person that parks their own private car in that spot is not part of your system. You don't have any way to signal them or to remove them. They're just it's kind of like an accidental arrival of something outside of your system.
I could imagine because at first we will have human drivers interacting also with robotic drivers. Yeah, let's put it that way. And there's where some of the friction might occur in the future, right? And what you're talking about right now, Bern, is the curbside regulation. I think that's what you call it, right?
That's right. Well, that's one of the parts. I was saying that when I said there was four parts, the second part was the curbside. The third part is the sidewalk, because you are reserving a space on the curb in order to stop a vehicle and load or unload. Mm-hmm. But you're reserving the space on the sidewalk in order to move a vehicle. Let's just say you're going to go from A to B. You have to go across six block faces and the intervening five crosswalks in between those six block faces, let's just say, if that's how you're getting from A to B. Well, what you're asking for is a reservation to use that block face, to travel along that block face, not to stop on it, because it's actually your journey. And so now we have problems of how should you behave on that block face? Should you travel on the right side or the left side? What speed are you permitted to travel on? We're not going to put little speed posting signs all over every sidewalk. That would be silly
and
ridiculous.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But we have to tell you, the robot operator, and this is all, of course, automated and digitalized and so on and so on. But somewhere we need to get the message that when robot number so-and-so arrives at block face number such and such, it's to travel at a maximum of 6 kilometers per hour, for example, whatever that mm-hmm. maximum mm-hmm. is. But when it receives the next one, it gets to the next block face, it has to go at only 4. Because yeah. the city says so. It's the same thing when you travel in any city. You might have a default speed for the city, but there's a school zone where the speed is lower, and then there's a throughway where the speed is higher. Well, we have to tell these systems what these speeds are, and the local traffic operator has to be able to change them. It's all going to be done without signage. It's all going to be done digitally. It's all going to be done through telecommunications. So how do we communicate that? What are the data forms, and what are the procedures to communicate that to the robots? Mm-hmm. And what's the procedure to change the speed limit? Let's just say you would like to change the speed limit on a certain set of blocks. Do you have to give 24 hours notice, 48 hours notice? How do you go about doing it? I mean, you can say, well, we're just going to change it in the system. It's very easy to understand that. But you have multiple companies doing multiple things for multiple reasons on multiple blocks, and you can't just change it without notice. You have to give people a lead because, for example, the logistics operator at 10 p.m. or midnight is planning its machines or planning its deliveries for the next day, starting at 6 a.m. or 8 a.m., whatever. You know that goes on. Those logistics operators have to understand what are the rules tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I have to know them. I have to know them the day before, or perhaps 2 days before, because it will change my plan, my distribution plan, and so forth. So all of these rules and the rules to change those rules all have to be standardized in a way that every logistics operator can say, what are my rules to his? Like, I know what I need to deliver. That's my business with my mm-hmm. with my customers. I'm just a carrier, but I need to know how to behave when I'm carrying what I'm carrying, and so on. So that's what that's what that portion of the standard for the sidewalk is. Now there was a fourth part, and that's where it gets a little bit more complicated. if you're not already upset.
No. So far, Bern, what you said now about the sidewalk robots, it reminded me a lot, and we were talking about that before, of course, but it reminded me a lot of the problems that we had in the factories with the robots, yeah? Because also there, you have to define some rules, yeah? You don't want to have the robots drive just anywhere, yeah? And you also have to restrict some areas, for example, yeah, for the robots where they shouldn't go, or maybe you have a construction site in the plant, yeah, and the robot should not pass at that and that time at this specific place. And what you described here for the sidewalk is actually quite similar, but even more complex, to put it that way. Yeah, so I think that's even more complex. And I was really astonished that there are already a lot of people talking about those issues. Yeah, and so that's very interesting. But there is a fourth point missing now that we wanted to talk about. So what is the fourth part of the standard?
Well, the fourth part, and this is what I thought would happen in year three or four, and that is that there is a lot of talk about an automated van, a truck of some size, arriving at a spot, it doesn't matter, it might be in a parking lot, arriving at a spot central to 20 or 30 or 40 deliveries. So it's central to a few tens of deliveries. And so that van might have with it, let's just say it has with it three robots.
Okay, so like a van parking somewhere and distributing his smaller delivery units onto the sidewalk. Okay, I understand.
Consider it a very small mobile warehouse, a warehouse with 20 or 30 or 40. Well, what is a DHL truck if it's not a small mobile warehouse? I understand that there's a driver that's going to unload that truck at various places, but at the moment that truck leaves its depot, mm-hmm. and it's got 50 packages in it, it's a roaming warehouse, and it has a route. So if that's what we're going to do, if we're going to have a van, just say it's automated, that's the promise, it's automated, but whether it is or not, and it shows up somewhere, it releases some robots, and they go back and forth. Sometimes they call these a mothership. It goes back and forth, mm-hmm. picks up loads, mm-hmm. so on. It doesn't matter that they're human, that there's human assistance or not. Forget about that. What does matter is that van needs a place to stop, of course. So it can't travel around the block looking for places up. It has to be assigned. It has to reserve a spot. Then when it reserves a spot, it also needs to reserve permission to take its loads, take its deliveries over those 20 or 30 or 40 pathways that it decides to deliver on. So now I need to coordinate the curbside where there's a truck sized, mm-hmm. the usual big step van sized vehicle, and two or three or four smaller robots. So now you arrive at a place where there's only two robots permitted, mm-hmm. let's say. Well, you need to know that because there's no point in you bringing four robots with you. You're only allowed to use two on that area that you have to deliver to. So it helps you to know that. And it also has to be coordinated with others because let's send a DHL truck over there. At the same time, let's send a FedEx truck over there, each with 50 packages and each with four robots. But your sidewalk only permits three robots. So now you have a scheduling conflict and you need to sort all those things out. So the, mm-hmm. the standards permitting, the data, the mm-hmm. procedures, then
data
the communication.
Data was point number one, right, was data. The second one was the curbside, right?
That's right. And now the mm-hmm. sidewalk, and now the combination. I'll call it the integration.
Mm-hmm. Of the curbside. As you call, and I like the term mothership delivery. You know,
yeah.
The mothership that drops the delivery robots. Huh? So that is basically sort of the scope of the whole ISO standard.
That's the scope. That is the scope of the whole standard. It's exploded into another, a larger series of parts, and that is so that's the main thing. You see the main picture. But while the robot is on the sidewalk, there is a whole bunch of rules about its directional behavior. I mean, for example, must it travel in a clockwise or anti-clockwise motion, or maybe you don't care. Does it have to travel on the right side or the left side, mm-hmm. or don't you care? These things are all important, as I just learned a couple of weeks ago, speaking to somebody from the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, said one of the ways we instruct the blind, help them to navigate on a sidewalk, is something they call shorelining. And shorelining is the act of hugging a building. Like as you travel along a sidewalk, remember you're visually handicapped, mm-hmm. and you want to stay along the side of the building so you get, it's easier for you to find landmarks and keep track of where you are, and you're a little bit out of the way of the main footpath. And he said, well, if you put robots on the right side, basically hugging the wall, then you will disturb that process. And of course, my answer was, well, the standard will just let them flip to the left. And he said, well, the problem is if you flip to the left or the outside, the curbside side of the mm-hmm. pavement, well, then you have transit stops. So mm-hmm. now you are interfering with people getting on and off the bus. So this is a very serious problem.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to go in the middle because all the pedestrians are there walking their dog and pushing their carts. I don't want to go on the right because of the as I just said. I don't want to go on the left because of transit. So what can I do?
Yeah, those are real, real existing problems. Yeah, and I remember that you have been also talking about the guys or the people that are walking with their dogs, and you got the leash between the dog and the person, and the robot has to know somehow or what happens in this situation. Yeah, at least somebody has to think it through, and that's what you actually are doing right now. Bern, can you tell us a little bit more about the time horizon on that? Are we talking about, I don't know, 10 years in the future right now, or what's the plan?
Writing a standard, because, you know, I think I can imagine most things. When I say most, like in 60 or 65% of things. And then it's one of the things that I do is I meet three times a year with people that listen to what I've imagined, and they tell me the things I've forgotten. I just gave you an example of that when I said I thought I was very clever to have everybody travel on the right-hand side, and then I found out that that's disturbing for the people who are visually impaired. So that's an example of my taking my ideas out and having them corrected to or considered in a real environment. So that process of establishing ideas, getting them tried and tested, these are all thought processes, because so far, the actual robotic companies have not, I've approached four of them, and so far they've all declined to collaborate because each would like to set their own standards, partly. And the other part is they would say, well, you know, let us know when you're finished the standard and, you know, we'll see what we can do to comply. I don't blame them. They're not right or wrong about that. But what it means is that I'm working with city planners and city people that work for cities. That are thinking about these problems. And many of those cities, I work with somebody in the city of Pittsburgh, and she's bringing in a company called KiwiBot to run a pilot. That's one of these smaller startups. I work with somebody from Washington, D.C., who's actually had a pilot from before. And I know somebody from London, England, that's had a pilot before. And so they tell me things that have gone wrong. And so that adds to the process. So that's a little bit of a long answer, but this whole thing is expected to take 4 years to write all the parts of the standard and to go through the whole process. It goes through a process with the ISO being formally correct, and that's just in the correction. That's just in the expression. When they say formally correct, that the standard is expressed in a way that everybody can understand what the standard says. And that I get guidance for that. There's professionals that take the ideas and make sure that they're expressed properly. And then, of course, that has to be translated and published. So by the time you can buy the full suite, and in German or French or whatever language you want to buy them in, that's going to be 2024 or 2025. That's a few years out before it's to that level. But there's another timeline going on here as well, and that's the timeline for the robotics themselves. They're already in some cities, so in some way, I'm a little bit late. However. Because those providers are by themselves, so Amazon's operating by themselves, and Starship is operating by itself, and FedEx is operating by itself, so with KiwiBot, because they're alone, they don't have multiple vendors, this standard is pretty minor. It doesn't matter to them.
Right, at the time, because they are acting by themselves in one city, because each city is only allowing one pilot at maximum right now, probably, I imagine, right?
That's right. And they might have, there's a lot of them, and there's several tens, I don't know, 90 or 100 or more than 100 in Milton Keynes robots. But when you go to the other cities, like in Toronto, there's four. Four is meaningless. They're just little toys. That doesn't create a threat. That doesn't create a big, you can't congest anything with four of them, for example. But it's really, you know, what happens when FedEx is perfected and UPS is perfected and DHL is perfected? All of those three companies have customers in hundreds of cities. So, you know, pick a city. I don't know. It doesn't matter what city. And DHL delivers there. It delivers several hundred packages a day in that city. And so does FedEx. And they both want to put robots in. Does that happen in 2023, 2024, 2025? When does that happen? Now, all of a sudden, this standard is really critical. Or an equivalent is very critical.
What is your personal opinion on that from what you experienced over the past few months and years that you are already working on that stuff? What is your personal opinion on when does it occur and when does it get really necessary?
Well, I think it's going to be really necessary in probably by 2023 in a couple of cities. I think there'll be multiple operators, and there'll be a few cities in which there'll be multiple operators asking to operate.
Mm-hmm.
Some cities are going to say, no, we don't want these. And some cities are going to say, well, these are really important because they're reducing truck traffic or whatever reason. So I'm just thinking 2023 or 2024, be people really looking at this, even though mm-hmm. the standard isn't finished. Some of the critical parts will be, the sidewalk parts will be done probably by 2022. And at least when I talked about 2024, that's the entire suite. There's now 12 parts. So that of course would take a while. But I want you to think about something here. So one of the things is that there's a major player in transportation called Uber, and mm-hmm. here in North America there's a second one called Lyft, and in other countries. There might be Didi, or there might be, I can't remember, Careem in the Middle East, and so on. So there's a dozen large providers of ride hailing. Now, what does that have to do with this? Well, the history of ride hailing, which is, I think, 2009 or 2010, so it's 11 years old. And during those 11 years, it's created a considerable fuss in many cities. There's a huge number of people that love it and use it. There's a huge number of cities that have problems with it. And it's a complex set of questions. And it's, as of a year ago, less than 1% of all trips in North America, in the United States, less than 1%, it's actually 0.4%, was by Uber or Lyft. And a huge kerfuffle for less than 1%. Well, how long will it be until 1% of all food deliveries are made by robots? Let's just say that takes 6 years. That's a tiny, tiny, tiny piece of the entire food delivery market, which is now bicycles and cars and so on. And so
mm-hmm,
on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about meals, like if you order a meal to your home. Right, I'm talking about that hot food,
also grocery deliveries, no? Because they are popping up right now everywhere and getting really popular, or at least over here in Europe already.
Well, I look out my window. I live on a street of five-story buildings, and the grocery truck is a frequent visitor to these series of five buildings. I don't know if it's twice a day or whatever. The grocery truck is frequent. I know that in my building alone, there's 88 families in my building, and there's very frequent deliveries of food from the various fast food places. They come in by bicycle, courier, and car, and so on. And I don't know whether there's 5 or 10 a day, whatever number it is. What I'm saying is that if in 5 years, only 1% of all these deliveries are made by robot, that's a huge number of robots on a huge number of sidewalks, causing a huge number of concerns and complaints and regulations and so on. So you'll see cities saying yes and they'll say no, and all kinds of things. So I think these next few years are going to be exciting for me, because I'm working mm-hmm. I'm working on the problem, but will be frustrating and will be fascinating for all the odd things that can happen. And I think it will be a bigger deal than the ride hailing. And the reason is that it's even more novel. I mean, ride hailing is like a weird taxi, but a robot on the sidewalk is like a very weird bicycle delivery. It's just not the same. And it's in a space which we don't want machines on the sidewalk. The sidewalk is for people. I mean, okay, we could push a baby carriage, but it's not for a bicycle, although we have that as a problem in many cities. Now we want to put machines that are motorized, that can go. Some of these machines can go a lot faster than a pedestrian, even though they might be constrained. They can go faster. So how do we enforce that and so forth? So I think the sidewalk is a much more difficult regulatory space, because we don't even have a habit of regulating the sidewalk. At least we have a habit of regulating the roadway, and we somewhat regulate the curb with parking payment and loading zones and ticketing and so on, but we don't have any process to regulate the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the policeman giving you a ticket for walking on the wrong side of the sidewalk? This is not thinkable.
It right? sounds weird, yeah. At least in normal cities. Yeah.
No, I mean, Caesar was regulating goods traffic back in like 30 or 40 BC. He was regulating the deliveries of goods mm-hmm. in Rome. This is like almost 2,100 years ago.
There's a long history to that, yeah.
Yeah, but we have no history at all, none. Yeah.
But if we're coming back to that, because that was a very interesting and very actually enlightening for me, the timeline that you mentioned. So we are actually talking about next year and the year after already, right? So you mentioned 2022 for the third part of the standard, the sidewalk standard.
Yep.
So this is actually in 1.5 or 2 years, right? We are not talking about 10 years in the future. So because I have the feeling that sometimes there is a little bit of a misguiding discussion going on how fast does the delivery robot come to the sidewalks? Yes, and some are having the attitude, you know, this will take the next, I don't know, maybe in 10 years or in 6 years or so. Yeah, but you are actually already talking to those cities that are doing the pilots in their cities, and they are approaching you and are asking for this work of a standard. So that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, no, it is. I think that the cities are nervous that they were caught by surprise with ride hailing. They were caught by surprise with the necessity for bike sharing. They weren't surprised by bikes, but they were surprised that, oh, we really have to have a bike sharing system. Mm. And they were caught completely by surprise by scooters, especially the various forms of whether you leave them on the sidewalk and so on. And we've been surprised now by so many, now by e-bikes, electric bikes and so on. Mm-hmm. And so when I tell them about the robots, they look at me and they want to say, okay, you know what? That's like 20 years away from now. Leave me alone. But they also look at me and say, you know what? We got fooled. For the last decade, we've been fooled 5 times. So we really need to start paying attention. And they are. So the cities that I approach are saying, okay, we need to think about this.
Yeah, very interesting. And what opportunities do you see, Bern, if this gets all started and with all the delivery robots? And what kind of opportunities do you see?
Well, I see an opportunity, a major opportunity, is for what we call here in Canada business improvement areas, and we call them business improvement districts in the United States, and in England, business improvement districts. I don't know what they're called in Germany, but there will be any city, like a city with 100,000 people or 150,000 people, whatever, lots of medium-sized cities, and they'll have a business district. There'll be downtown. There'll be 60 or 70 or 80 retailers and businesses that cluster downtown. And around those downtowns, there'll be 50 or 60,000 homes, sometimes apartments, sometimes single-family homes, around like a 2 or 3 kilometer radius around this downtown area. So we call those business improvement areas. And those have all been harmed in North. I just talked about North America. I can't speak for Europe. But in North America, they were challenged by what's called the box store. These are massive stores with huge inventories, with huge parking lots. And so it's better for you to drive to these stores, a very popular one called Walmart here in North America, for example. But you'll have like IKEA, a big store with lots of massive parking lot. You'll go there and you'll do big shopping. Instead of walking to a nearby store, you'll go to these big, we call them box stores. That started 15 years ago, and that was a threat to these city retailers. Then e-commerce picked up dramatically over the past 5 or 7 years. And of course, over the past 18 months, e-commerce has grown by 50% just during 2020. And so now the combination of that with the pandemic, many, many of these retailers have been shut down. They've gone out of business completely. And so there's a concern. There's 300 of these in just in Ontario, just in my province. There's 500 in Canada, and there's 2,000 in North America, all these small business improvement areas. These can all be helped. Many of them can be helped. If we can lower the delivery costs of food and small items to people's homes rather than drive to the box store, if it's too far to walk or you're unable to walk, have it delivered instead of a bicycle delivery, which is quite expensive. Here in Canada, you can have it delivered by a robot, which is about a third or a quarter of the price. So my viewpoint is that these robots could, by lowering delivery costs, could help these BIAs recover from the pandemic. Now, of course, the robots aren't ready yet. The standard's not ready this year. The robots are not ready to... Now, a robot operator can come in and have a single operator operate now. For example, the company Starship can come in right now by themselves. It doesn't need a standard, and they can perform this operation. And I think that's what will happen. I think that these, as we come back from this pandemic, I think that some of these business districts will hire or collaborate with these robot companies. And I think you'll see, that's where I think you'll see them in small numbers in next year. And that will do, as soon as that competition starts, as soon as somebody says, well, I would like to come there as well. They say, well, now we have a multi, so you're not going to have a multi-vendor problem until 2023 or 2024. Yeah, but you will have the single vendor is not the issue in 2022. It's the multi-vendor issue that I'm prepared for. And that's 2023, 2024.
All right. And so you are currently working on this standard, Bern. And could you just explain a little bit on what is the exact definition, or how can people get in contact with this standard or your work? So if they are interested, or is that actually a possibility that they can bring in your, their view on the topic? And can they contact you in any way, or can they read something about it? What would you say?
Well, so there's a couple of levels of answer to that. So first of all, in the very general answer, the answer is absolutely. If you're interested, I have a couple of white papers. There's a white paper that explains the standard in modest detail, layman level modest details. It's only, I think, 15 pages. It's not overbearing. There's another white paper. It's really targeted at planning, and that's a little bit longer than that. Both of those are available. What I can do is I can send those to you, and you can include them in your description of the podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For example, I can send you both of those links. That's at the sort of anybody level. Now, I can make the standard draft. That's a whole different document. I can make the draft standard available to anybody who wants to make input. In other words, if you're working for a planner or you're working for a city, and this is a matter of concern or interest to you, or if you're with an accessibility group, let's just say you're with someone that's concerned about accessible access for wheelchairs, for example, and you could be and should be concerned about this, I can make the standard available. I certainly make the summaries available. And I would love your input. That's another level. The final level is I have a group that meets three times a year. This is a little bit formal, not terribly formal, but we meet in a Zoom chat room in something I call a round table. And at that round table, there's room for 11 logistics operators or commercial. They could be robotic companies. They could be logistics operators. And there's still space for four. And there's also room for a dozen cities, but that's full. Mm-hmm. If I had enough interest, I would be willing to duplicate that. But what those are three times a year, two-hour discussions. We actually look at the document, and we actually criticize what's missing and what needs to be altered in the document. So it's actually a working meeting. Now, that takes some commitment, and I actually I ask for a sponsorship fee for that, to join that group, if you are a commercial enterprise, because you are working on a document as a commercial enterprise that would be useful to you as a planner in the future, or mm-hmm. as a robotics logistics operator in the future. So if you are in that business, logistics business or planning business, then the standard is critical to you.
And just to emphasize this, Bern, this is an international standard, right? So it's actually it's not only restricted to Canada or the US. Is that right?
That's great. It's international. So, for example, some of the cities on this is London. Transport for London has a representative. Budapest has a representative. Lisbon has a representative. Just trying to think if there's one more from Europe. I can't think. And there's two cities in Canada that are represented, and then the other five are American cities that are represented, such as Pittsburgh and Washington and Orlando and so on. So the cities are half North America and half European.
And so I was missing a German city actually, Bern. So if there is a German city interested to work on the standard, so please approach Bern Grusch, right? Well, that was very, very interesting. Thank you very much. My last question would be, and I ask this to everybody in the podcast, so how would you imagine the logistics of the future? What are your thoughts on that, Bern?
The field of logistics will grow. Consumption goes up. That's almost certain. The things that we can order without going there becomes faster and easier to have things brought to you than it is to go out and drive to them, for example. That has been a huge uptick because of the pandemic, and it won't settle back. It's not so e-commerce in 2022 is not going to go back to e-commerce in 2019. It's going to be somewhere in between now, very intensive. And so that is growing logistics. More and more shapes and types of vehicles and automation therein. More and more warehousing. I mean, I think that there is a huge opportunity for small warehouses. And one of my visions, and I don't know how much this will be true, but I think there's a huge opportunity for small warehouses at the periphery of cities that can bring in things from the massive warehouses, all targeted for the next day delivery. And many of that could go out either in these motherships or can, if depending on the positioning of these, I call them micro warehouses or mini warehouses, can actually go out by robot. So I think that the field will grow. The automation in that field will grow, not just in the warehouse, but actually out on the street. And I think a decade from now, seeing a delivery to you by a robot, it will be not surprising. You'll think nothing of it. And I think within 10 years, you will see ambulatory robots. In other words, a robot that can walk upstairs. And that's an even harder problem from a robotic perspective. Of course, a harder problem, but it relieves a lot of the sidewalk problems because an ambulatory robot that's nimble it's a lot more fluid in how it can get around obstacles because it can also use stairs. You could make them intelligent enough to use doors and so on. But I think that's it's a little bit fanciful at this point, but you will see them. We will see that as well.
Well, thank you very much, Bern. That was very, very interesting. And I think also for our international logistics audience, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for being on our show, Bern.
Thank you, Mark. You're welcome. And thank you very much as well.
All right. That was the Logistics Drive podcast episode with Bern Grusch. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. We have a lot of interesting guests and topics coming up for you. I'm Boris Vergendreher. Until next time.